Excuse me, please. I apologize if the recording is not too easy to hear. We had no choice but to turn the air conditioning on. It was getting quite unbearable. We were saying that the Rakhwari is trying to answer the various questions that we just had. And he's trying to prove it from a brisa that we quoted on the previous Amud as well. The brisa says, Yigi is man v'lo nitzer. At the time came, they didn't get married. Okos mishalo v'okos v'shuma. She eats from him. And as well, she can eat from Shuma if he's a Kohen. So seemingly, this would seem to indicate that regardless of whether he got sick or not, or she got sick, or any of those cases that we discussed, in any event, he should still be responsible to feed her in those days. So Abakai wants to be a little more specific and precise than that. He says, lo nasu lo katani. It does not say that they did not get married, the word nasu being without a yud in it. Alo lo nisu. Rather it says that they didn't get married, the lashon of nisu has a yud in it. What's the difference between nasu and nisu? So before we proceed, let us just take a look at Rashi. Pashut Avachoy, Hach Baya Minas Nisim, Diktami. Now Avachoy wants to answer this question from our Mishnah that it said, Lo Nisu, V'lo Kachani Lo Nasu. I put the lashon of Nisu with a Yod and not Nasu. To Rishama Shah Baya Lo Nasu. That would imply the lashon of Nasu would imply that the husband stopped it. But because it doesn't say that, it says Lashon Nisu, it implies, Rashi says, Ella lo Nisu, came the Balaam. They did not get married to the Balaam. Koloha covered the Nashim. It seems to be making dependent that stoppage of the wedding on the woman. As if that it's when the woman stopped it, that's when he is obligated to pay. The Gemara asks, take it on him. Not the case. He become an Akhman and he... If the case where she actually stopped it and she said, we're not having the wedding today. So I might also be sure of also the Shuma. It doesn't make sense then in that scenario that he should have to feed and support the woman from that day on. She knowingly, by choice, made a decision to push up the wedding. Elalav rather must be the Isthmus, that there was some kind of an onus, she got sick or something of that nature. Giagavna, like the cases that we're discussing, with Katani of Mishalov of the Truma. And yet the Mishnah says that she eats from his and eats Truma if he's a Kohen. So we see a pretty good proof to the idea that she gets supported even in a case where there is an onus. One might wonder why it is that Rav Achai needs to be so precise in bringing this deal of Nasu and Nisu with a Yud, without a Yud. What's the difference? The Bryce is pretty clear. Seems to say that if the time came and they didn't get married, then she gets avoided. Why should it matter? Why should we assume that the Mishnah is giving us a halacha which only applies in some scenarios and in some cases? Presumably, the Mishnah is saying of blanket halacha, which applies in all cases. So perhaps we can say that generally, when the Mishnah of Raisa says a halacha, we presume it to be applicable only in what's called the smallest chiddush, only in the most, in the least novel way. In other words, if a halacha of a Mishnah includes more than one case, and it would make more sense that a halacha apply in case A than case B, then we can logically say, so it must be that the Mishnah only meant for the halacha to apply in case A. Because if it meant for the halacha to apply in case B as well, the case B being the case which is less likely, so the halacha is less logical for that case, if the Mishnah had wanted the halacha to apply in case B, that was the law the Mishnah was trying to teach, it would have explicitly mentioned case B. Now, it's sort of an okay day, a priori, right, as a kavakoma. But since I know case B to be true, so then I automatically know that the halakha should apply in case A as well. If it applies in the less logical case, it certainly will apply in the more logical case. However, since the Mishnah did not write the halakha being true in case B, and it only said it as sort of a blanket halakha, therefore we can say it must be the Mishnah said it in this way, in this sort of vague way, because it wanted us to assume that it would only apply in the most likely case for it to apply, which would be case A in our example. In this case, it would be a case where, let's say, Chalahu, in other words, what's the most likely case for him to be liable for supporting her if the wedding got pushed off? If on some level it was his fault. So that's the case that we potentially assume the Mishnah is talking about. And therefore, we would say it's only in those cases, but in a case which is less likely to be responsible, a case where it's on some level her fault, we would say that he's not responsible to support her for that intervening time. Comes along Rav Achai and says, no, don't read the Mishnah that way. Since he uses a lashon which has a yod in it, of lomnisu, which is female, therefore it implies that it's in a case where the women are the ones who are sort of making the wedding be pushed off, even if it's not their fault, right? Because you know, if it wasn't their fault, that further wouldn't make any sense, because, excuse me, if it was their fault, it wouldn't make any sense, because why should their choosing to push off the wedding entitle them to be supported by their husband, or their would-be husband? Rather, it must be a case where they pushed it off, but not on purpose by accident, by something that is beyond their control. And if that's true, then we see a pretty good proof to the idea that if it gets pushed off as a result of her getting sick, or something which is her fault, then he's still responsible to support her for that intervening time. The Gemara continues by trying to refute this proof. The Gemara says, Omer Ravashi says, Va'olam emalacha, really I will tell you, kol onsa lo afla. Really, any case of an onus, she shouldn't eat. Meaning any onus, regardless of whose fault it is, even if he got sick perhaps, still, he doesn't have to support her in any of those cases. Sort of like the Lafiga from the previous page, according to the way the Gemara said it over, not as a question-answer, but as a statement, that since we know that in the case of onus, where the Tachana of Chazal pushed off the wedding, he doesn't have to pay. So too will say, where it's an onus, he doesn't have to pay, even if it's because he got sick, or she got sick. The Rashi says, maybe we can maintain that halakha being true, even in light of this verse that Rav Achai quoted. Why? Because he says, really, I'll tell you, kol onsa lo achla, every onus she doesn't eat. You become an asvi inhu, and he's the one, maybe even who stopped the wedding. Uvidinu di bayle le misni lo nasu. And really, he wanted to, really, the Mishnah, the Tana who taught this baisa, wanted to teach the halacha was without a yod as if the male. In other words, really, Ravashi is not fully refuting the baisa of Rav Achai. We're not actually going back to the Lafika of Rav Yosef in the previous page. Because indeed, when he gets sick, he is still going to be responsible. And Ravashi wants to say that that's actually the case that this baisa was referring to. So the Gemara's refutation is not a complete refutation of the answer of Rav Achai. It only knocks off the proof regarding the cases where the woman gets sick. But if he got sick, that's what the Mishnah is telling us, that he does in fact have to pay. It's sort of the lowest level case, the least common denominator that the Mishnah could be referring to in this instance. And it says, really, the Mishnah did want to write nothing. As you, Rav Achai, wanted to make some kind of a deal, an inference from the Lashon of Nisu as opposed to Nasu, really the Tana wanted to write the word Nasu, because really the Tana only wants Allah to be sure in a case where it's his fault. So why then did the Tana choose a Lashon of Nisu with a Yud, which implies female? The ID the Tana Resha, did he? And since the Resha over there, the context of that Raisa, and the first half of it is discussing something about her, was using a female subject in that sentence. Hananani Sefer did it. So the Sefer wanted to remain consistent. The second half of that Sefer wanted to remain consistent and use the Lashon of female, but of course, it's really a case where the man is somewhat responsible for the delay of the wedding. Rashi explains that Rashi Dibur Hamaso Va'aydi Dikana Reisha did he Nosin the Betula Shnei Matar Chodesh U'Almana Shloshim Yom. Rashi explains what is the ratio over there. It's a statement that says we give the Betula 12 months, meaning that's how much time there is from the Eretzin, the betrothal, to the Nisuin, the actual marriage. U'Almana Shloshim Yom, and for a widow, a woman who's getting married, who's been married before, there's only a 30-day period from the Eretzin to the Nisuin. So that was a statement which is discussing from the woman's perspective. Right? The woman was the subject of that sentence. Therefore, the Mishnah continues and says, Nisu, a Lashon of female, even though of course it's only true in a case where he is at fault, and that's why he's being he's liable to support her for those intervening days. Now, although there is what to discuss in this piece of Gemara that we just read, I chose to give that piece over in sort of a bare-bones fashion, just basic Gemara Rashi, getting involved with some of the back and forth of the Gemara, but nothing too much more than that, because we're coming up to a sugya which is really much more of a springboard for discussion, for questions and answers, for back and forth, and the Tosafot from there are much more, I guess what you'd call meaty. There's much more of what the things we're keeping to and get involved in. So I wanted to kind of get to that sugya that we're about to come to in order that we should spend a little bit more time on that. Well, unfortunately, we're probably not going to have time to finish it. However, let's begin and see where we go. Amar Rava. Rava says, "Uvinim gitin enokin." And regarding gitin, regarding health of divorce contract, enokin. This is not so. Meaning, we just said that if an onus happens by delay, which delays in the suing, which delays in marriage, so then because of the fact that it's an onus, we say that nobody's sort of liable for that delay, and rather it just it gets delayed, but the chassan in this case would be the liable party having to support the would-be kala. He does not have to support her. However, regarding gittin, this is not so. Now, obviously, you know by divorce. Obviously, the divorce coming is not going to make him liable to pay. If anything, just the opposite, it's going to make him not liable to support his wife. So, what exactly does Rava mean by this statement? Let's see Rashi, who will shed some light. Rashi says, "The Lenin gets an anal pain. I'll a peacock card." This statement of Rava is going on the Lafika, which was on the previous page. The statement which said that any onus, regardless of whose fault, who we could ostensibly point the finger at, still any onus is going to prevent the chassan from being liable for that intervening time. And that statement told us that any pushing off of the wedding due to an onus exempts him from being liable to Peter for that intervening time. Rava says, regarding Hilchos Gittin, regarding divorce contracts, in time of onus moala. The time of onus does not help. Regarding what? Rashi explains, in Nafan Gelishto, if a person gave a divorce contract to his wife, Al Manat, in Lo Avo Ad Mantoni, and he gave a divorce contract with a condition, right? Just like any contract that exists. A divorce contract is also subject to the stipulations and conditions the writer of the contract put in it. And he said, this divorce contract should be null and void unless I return before a certain time. Which is to say, a person gives this divorce contract to his wife and says, this contract will divorce you if I do not return by a specified date. However, if I do return, that makes the contract null. The purpose of doing such a thing, the purpose of this legal device, would be if a person is unsure if he's going to return. Let's say if a man is going off to war or is going on a long, dangerous journey, and there's concern that if he does not return, the woman's marital status will be in question. She will be what's called an arguna. She'll be chained because she won't know whether or not she's a widow or if her husband's still alive out there somewhere and she just isn't able to return. Therefore, this legal device is useful. He'll say that if I don't return by a certain time, then it'll turn out that you're divorced. And then this marriage contract that I'm giving you now will be effective. And then she'll no longer be in doubt about her marital status because she'll be divorced, and she'll, she may choose to wait to see if her husband is in fact still alive, but her ex-husband at this point. But this way, should she need to get remarried, she has an active divorce contract which ended the marriage with her previous husband. So then Rashi explains to us what happens in Nana. So this was the case. And then there was an onus happened. He was unable to return, but not as a result of him dying or not as a result of him choosing not to return. Rather, an onus happened. He got put in prison when he was out on his journey. And let's assume for a second that in this instance, it was not his intention for the guest to be effective in a case where he got put in prison. So the question is it a get or not? So Rava says that kind of onus is not a valid kind of. If he did not come, I raised their get. He's not able to say, I was honest, I wasn't able to get back. Right? Obviously, the scenario that we provide is the reason somebody might want to employ this device for the get is because of us going off to war or something of that nature. But let's say it was something else, and it was really just because he wasn't sure if he was going to want to stay married, perhaps. Some kind of a change case like that. And we would know whether he wants to stay married, but then whether he returns. And if he returns, it must be he wants to stay married, and therefore the get is ineffective. Or let's say he chose to stay married to his wife, but he wasn't able to make it back because he got put in prison, like that case that we mentioned. So is that a valid taina to make to render the get ineffective when he returns a week after the date? Or no, do we say that that get is in fact effective? And theoretically, if she's gotten married, it would be fine, and there would be no problem with it. The Rava says, the halacha is, that by getting the time of onus is invalid, and if he came back a week after the date and said, I was not able to return due to forces outside my control, we say, too bad, the divorce is still valid. The Gemara explains, therefore we see the Rava holds, ain't on us to get him. There's no valid time of onus to get him. Now this line of the Gemara is a little bit perplexing. It seems to be redundant because we just said that that's what Rava holds. How is the Gemara, usually when you see a line of the Gemara that begins Almakasava Rava, or Almakasava anybody, you're sort of inferring from a statement that an Amora made what they hold about a case related to that, but not that exact case. Here, Rava said, I hold that a kind of onus is invalid and given. And then the Gemara says, oh, we see that Rava holds a kind of onus is invalid and given. Well, of course we see that. That's what he just said. We're not inferring anything. That's just taking his actual statement and sort of repackaging it. And they're not even doing a good job repackaging it. They're pretty much saying it in almost the same words. Rashi says on that line, Almakasava ain't onus begitten. Ain't time is onus begitten, so we're coming the first time. So Rashi is really very unhelpful. He just says that he rephrases Rava's words to put the word kana in there, and then says, well, later on we're going to explain what Rava's reason is for his halacha. Right? So, okay, Rava, we assume Rava has a reason, and we thank you, Rashi, for telling us what the reason is, but the Gemara is going to tell us the reason later on, so we shouldn't wait too long to be confused by it now. But meanwhile, how does that help us in terms of it doesn't help us at all, really, in terms of understanding the redundancy of this line. There's no coexistence on this line, so that's not going to help us either. Perhaps you could say that something about Lover's own statement, "Uvinim gitin eino kain," is not so clear that he means eino nafsi gitin. I don't have a satisfactory answer more than that. It is a perplexing line. It seems to be redundant. Perhaps the Gemara simply wants to repackage it for the sake of their own discussion. That we know that there's a machlokas that's out there, whether or not Eino Nesigitin or Yesho Nesigitin, and those are the words of the phrase, because since Rava didn't choose to phrase it in that way, we're going to sort of repackage it still. Rava really meant that Eino Nesigitin. He didn't say it that way, but we see that that's the camp that he belongs to. In any event, let us proceed. The Gemara says, "Minale l'Rava ha." Where does Rava know this from? Meaning, Rava can have all this as far as the Gemara assumes at this point that he's not making this up totally of his own accord. He's getting it from some kind of a Tanaic source. Now you know that's how things work in Jewish law. There's an Asura, and any time that we can chalk things up to a earlier source, we'll always try and do that. The Gemara makes one attempt to identify a Mishnah where perhaps Rava got his halacha from. If you'll say, "Mehadit na'an," Rava got it from the Mishnah that says, "Harei zekitev in robot mikan v'at shneim asa chodesh." But the case is, a person said to his wife, here's your divorce. If I don't return before 12 months, right, pretty much the case that Rashi mentioned earlier, and then he died within 12 months. So certainly he's not returning. So then the get should be presumably valid. So the Mishnah says, "Halacha ain't no get." It's no get. So at that point we would say, okay, so that means that it's not a get and his tanai is invalid. Right? And although that itself does not, although that itself would not fit with Rava, because Rava said, right, that the halacha is ain on us to get him, and now we're saying that because he was on us, right, that even though he didn't return, his onus is going to make it not a get. In other words, we would initially assume that he didn't return, so that the condition was fulfilled. So then why is it not a good get? It should be a good get. He said it should be a get if I don't come back. He didn't come back, but it was an onus. So that initially does not seem like a riot to Rava. However, the Gemara says we can read the mission as follows. And this is where some of the wonderful back and forth becomes a little bit tricky and is really certainly, like I was saying, meaty. The Gemara says, "Mate who they no get." The Mishnah specifically chose the case of mate. Hachala harese get. But if he became sick, and that's why he wasn't able to return, that was his owner, then it would be a good get. So, this is a little bit tricky. Because the Gemara is quoting the Mishnah, which on the one hand seems to not fit with Rava, because he died in the case that we're discussing. That presumably should be an onus. And if that's an onus, then it would make sense that that's why it's not a good guess. And Rava said it should be a good guess despite his tiny of onus. So how do we understand this Gemara? Well, the Gemara is trying to say that if the Mishnah specifically chose the case of mate, of where he died. But if he became sick, it would not be a good get. Excuse me, if he became sick, it would be a good get despite his own. In other words, the Gemara has the right to make a deal as follows. We said earlier, we mentioned that a Mishnah always says the greatest Kiddush. And here, the greatest Kiddush would have been to say if he became sick. Presumably because becoming sick is less of an onus than dying. And if getting sick is less of an onus, and we know that an onus is a valid kind of to prevent the expectation of the guest, so then that would be a lie against Rava. But because the Mishnah specifically did not choose that case, nor chose the case of Mace of death, so then we can say that obviously the Mishnah doesn't hold that there is a concept of a taina of onus by guest, and that he can say when he comes back after he gets well, hey, it's no guest. Right? We see that that's not a valid taina, not a valid claim by the husband. So obviously we see, like Rava, there's no taina of onus by guest. However, upon further inspection, the Gemara becomes a little bit tricky because, well, that's true, then how does the Gemara understand the justification of the Mishnah's halacha that when he died, it's not a guest? Because dying is also an onus, and dying prevents him from returning. And in that case, the halacha is that it's not a guest, it's not a good guest. So why is it that in that case, the halacha is that it's not a good get? Didn't Rava say there's no kind of onus by getting? He didn't return. What's the difference? What the reason was? Let's look at Rashi for a minute. Rashi says, "Ain't no get. The im ain't rabbanim is kugli yavam." And the Rashi tells us the nafka mina, the relevance of this halacha. What's the difference whether or not there's a get? If he has no children, she becomes zakuk, or tied to Yibum, to the Mitzvah of Yibum. The Mitzvah of Yibum is where a husband dies with no children and has a brother, then his wife has an obligation, not an obligation, his brother has an obligation to marry his widow, and sort of to perpetuate the family name. And if he's unable to do so for whatever reason, then even if he can't fulfill the mitzvah of Yibam, he has to do what's called Kalista, which is a ceremony involving her taking off his shoe, and then sitting in front of him. But be that as it may, whatever the ceremony is, the point is that until that ceremony is done, either Yibam or Kalista, one of those two things is done, she's unable to marry anybody else. So she's what we call tied to Yibam. She has, because this mitzvah is in place, she's no longer able to marry anybody else until one of those two things occurs, either Yibam or Chalitza. So Rashi's telling us that the Lativi around the Gemara has a very practical relevance because of the fact that perhaps one of the reasons that he would want to create such a guest is in order to prevent her from being tied, so to speak, to Yibam. In other words, if he's unable to return for whatever reason, and he's no longer going to be your husband, he, let's say perhaps if he dies, it has to be a case of death, excuse me, because only in the case of death is there going to be a missing even, so it has to be, he's concerned that he might die, and he's writing his death in such a way in order to prevent her from being tied to his brother, and rather to be able to marry anybody whom she pleases. Right, maybe this guy doesn't like his brother, or maybe he just feels bad for his widow. In any event, that could be the motivation, and we're going to see that becomes very relevant later on in the Gemara. So now Rashi explains the actual step of the Gemara, the step where the Gemara brought the proof from this Mishnah. Makes it in again. So halo shad yagita adid beis chodesh. That it doesn't become again until 12 months have passed. Who makes the Tokazman? And he died within that time. Uman Kamagar as well. And who's divorcing her? Mehashta at this point. Ain Hamasim Agarshan. Dead people do not get a divorce contract. Okay, so Rashi is going to help us resolve the dilemma that we mentioned a minute ago. Our dilemma was that in the same way that the Gemara is bringing a proof to Rava, they're also bringing a proof against him, because why is it that when the husband dies before returning, his lack of return prevents the guest? That should be an indication against Rav that the time of onus is in fact a valid time of Igin. But as he explained, there's nothing to do with him claiming onus. It has to do with the nature of the legal device that the husband employed when he wrote the get. The legal device that he employed is what's called the matreya, retroactive. The contract, the divorce contract, is not active when he actually hands it to her. As we know, because we have to sort of wait and see if the condition becomes fulfilled. He's saying it's only a good divorce contract if I do not return after 12 months. So, since that's the case we're discussing, that means the divorce becomes active when he doesn't return after 12 months. That's the time the divorce becomes active. Although the contract is written and the sort of act of divorce happens 12 months prior, since the divorce hinges on the condition of his return, therefore the divorce doesn't actually take effect until he doesn't return. That's the condition that's required for the divorce to be effective. And since at the time of divorce, sort of the husband is the one who's activating it, because ultimately the husband is the one who's causing her to be divorced. And at the time of divorce, which is after the condition becomes fulfilled, after 12 months, he's no longer alive. He's unable to be a legal participant in this get, and therefore he's no longer able to divorce her. So therefore we say that the get is invalid, because she never received a get from anybody who was alive to be a legal participant in the get. And therefore she's a widow, because her husband has died. So that's the reason why the get is no good. But if it was just because of an onus, Rava would tell you that the way to read this Mishnah is that obviously, of course, the get, it would be good even despite his claim of onus. Okay, so now the Gemara's response to knock off this proof gets a little bit trickier as well. Doma la olam ema la kachola nami eno get. And perhaps maybe I'll tell you that if he got sick, it's also not a get. Meaning, don't make that deal that you wanted to make, that only because of mace, but is it not a get, but really if he got sick, and that was his own act, it would still be a get. Really, I'll tell you, it is still not a get, even in that case. So then why did the Mishnah choose a case of mace? You know, that was the basis of the Gemara's vehicle, was the Mishnah's choice of case. The Gemara answers that problem, the Mishnah wanted to teach you a special halacha, which Rashi himself referenced, that there's no such thing as a get after death. In other words, because of the fact that the activation of a get has to be done by a person who can be a legal participant to a get, i.e., someone who's still alive, the Mishnah is teaching you that halacha. In other words, before this Mishnah, I might have thought that really a dead person can activate a get, meaning because he actually gave his wife a get 12 months before, there's enough of a legal participation from his point of view to activate the get. And then when he dies, he didn't return. So that's when the point when the get becomes activated. But he created a device which would become activated after his death. Why is that illegal? Why doesn't that work? Right? So the Mishnah is telling you that it doesn't work because since the activation of the get is really occurring after the fulfillment of the condition, which is 12 months later and it's after his death, and the activation has to occur at a time when the person who activated the get is alive, because he has to be a participant at that time, even though he's not necessarily there, but it's as a result of his action. And his actions can no longer have a legal result at a time when he's dead. The Mishnah is teaching me that halacha. And the way that Mishnah chooses to teach you that halacha is by taking a case of mace, taking a case of where he's already dead. That we would not be able to learn that halacha if it was a case of chala. So the Gemara responds by saying, Hatana Leresha. Don't tell me that the Mishnah wanted to go out of its way to teach me a case of mace, to teach me this halacha of Engelachanita. The Resha, the previous part of the Mishnah, already taught it to me. What was the case over there? The Mishnah says three cases. If a husband says, a husband says to his wife, here's your guest if I die, here's your guest if I do not recover from the sickness, or the husband says to his wife, here's your guest after my death,
which is similar to the first case of the three, but not exactly the same. Shalom Makom, he did not say anything.
So we already
taught me the halakha of not of a get after death not being valid. So why would the Mishnah need to teach you that halakha again? It must be in order to teach you Lava's chiddush of Ein Ones Gittin, that by virtue of the diyuk of mace, and therefore we see that hachala Ein Harez Aget, that if he got sick, his sign of onus would not prevent it from being a get. That's the reason the Mishnah chose the case of death. But really, of course, we already knew this chiddush of Ein Get Lach Hamisa, that dead people do not are not able to effect divorces. Now the Gemara continues by trying to defend the Raya to Rava. What do you mean that we already learned that halacha? Gilmalach will give me the Rava famous. Perhaps that Raisha, that first part of the Mishnah which already taught me in Gelach Amisa, we're trying to defend the knockoff to the Raya to Rava, which is why the Gemara is allowed to use the word of Lashon of Dilma, because any potential knockoff to a proof is considered an effective knockoff, because it's no longer 100% proof. Maybe it's not a proof. So the Gemara says, Dilma la'afu kimi de Rava sayin. Perhaps that ratio that you said already taught me the Kiddush of Ein Get La'af Hamisa is coming to exclude, is coming to teach me not to follow the shita of the Rabbo Seinu. The Rabbo Seinu is a Tana that we're going to quote in a second. The Gemara quotes the Tana that we learned in a Barso. The Rabbo Seinu, he tiru ha lihinase. The rabbis permitted her to get married. The Amin, and we say, Man Rabbo Seinu, who is Rabbo Seinu? Rabbi Yudah Mashmuel, Beidina Desharo Mishka. It's the Beis Din who permits getting married. Let's take a look at Rashi to get a little more clarity in this, and then unfortunately we're going to have to close. Rashi says, Ki Gupa Kamashmalan Kulomar. This is the step which was the initial knockoff of the Raya to Rava. Hi, Detona Mace, Lava would be able to lay, Tanya. Yash that Mace is not to the deal of teaching me Kala. The Mace has to make an inference, how Kala has I get. Ella Ashwin, rather, to teach us Higufa the Ein Get Lach Hamisa. And the teacher is about the thing itself, that there's no get after Misa. That you will blow tonight, and even if there's no tonight, you don't know Omer Risha or Reza Gita for Akamoti, for business that's to his wife. Here is your divorce contract, that's why I die. Ain't no get, approach from the Yavam. This is no get, which would then be able to permit her not to have to be even a chalitza and get married to anybody she likes. And then as we go down to say, Zer Gita Tamesi, this is the case that we just quoted. Shkiv Meira, Shikosa Gel Ishto. Okay, I see we're running out of time. Let us just skip to the pertinent Rashi for the stuff we just read. Dilma Rashi says, that's the heading of that Rashi. Dilma Hadid Shukhtefa Imlo Basi Bakule, Rahukumi the Rabbi Sainu, coming to exclude from the Rabbi Sainu, Itchu, is why it's necessary. The three dialogues, they argue on this. Rami, the Inge Rahamisa, who, there's no Ge Rahamisa, but given the cost of the Ge, Man Shivaso, Humokhia. Since the time of the get is written in the get, so then the Zman itself sort of proves Shikak Omala in Lo Basi Lo Zman Yehi Get L'Mafriya Nehayom. In other words, since there is a Zman in the get, therefore the Rabbi Sinu's opinion is that if there's a date on the get, that when he says this should be a get for that time, he means that the expectation of the get should occur today when I give you the get, on condition that XYZ happens. But of course, the expectation of the get is happening today. So he's alive today. So he has every legal right to perpetuate the get today. And Rabbi Sinu says he assumes this. And therefore, since we have the right to assume this, therefore Rabbi Sinu is saying that in a lot of cases where you might think you apply the halakha, the Ein Get Lach Hamisa, you wouldn't apply it. And since this opinion is out there, the Mishnah needs to reiterate the halacha of Ein Gelach Hamisa to teach you that not only is the halacha that dead people do not affect divorces, but even in cases where we might be able to assume that the application of the get happened when the person was alive, if he didn't explicitly state that it has to be effective while he's alive and he only implied it, we still assume that the expectation of the get happens at the end of the condition being fulfilled after the 12 months. And we need two cases of permission to specify that we don't hold like the Rabbi Sain. One to teach you that the halacha is true, and one to teach you that we don't follow the Rabbi Sain. And therefore, we need the halacha to teach me the Kiddush of Ein Gelach Hamisa, even in the case where he implies that it should be effective today, to teach me that we don't assume that. And therefore, we can't infer from his from the statement of Meis that Hakal HaRezeh get, because we needed the Kiddush to teach me specifically Meis. And therefore, you can't make an inference if you needed to teach me the Kiddush for something else. And therefore, the Gemara has no Raya to Rava. I believe we run a minute or two over time. Bezal Hashem will continue next week. With this Gemara, it just continues very much with these very same steps in Aristotle on this that we should touch upon. Have a good Gemara. We will continue next week.